Hear, hear, with Sean Dilley on Audio Boo.
Women, they make up around half of our population, so why then do they fill just 36% of all public offices? And why is the public and private sector predominantly led by men? As for Westminster, shouldn't they be setting a better example when it comes to women in politics?
The economies that will flourish in the future are not those which are blinkered by prejudice or stultified by the old boys' network, but those which draw on the talents and abilities of all.
Hear, hear, with Sean Dilley on Audio Boo.
Well, the figures make for some pretty grim reading. And you'd have thought, wouldn't you, that Westminster, of all places, would be slightly more progressive, but just 22.5% of all MPs are women. Broken down by parties, that's 32% of Labour MPs, 16% in the Tory party, and some would argue, surprisingly, just 12% in the Liberal Democrats. Of course, it's not just politics that has the issue. Looking at the judiciary, 13% of senior judiciary are women, and national newspaper editors just 5%. So it's a fairly colossus problem. Later, we'll chat with Preethi Sundaram from the Women's Equalities and Rights Organisation, the Fawcett Society.
We may need to put in place special measures to level out the playing field, and that's exactly what Positive Action attempts to do.
We'll be chatting with the Labour MP for Lewisham East, Heidi Alexander, herself the beneficiary of one of Labour's women-only candidates lists.
Positive discrimination is actually necessary if you're going to change the culture of this place and actually get women into politics.
And alongside me as Hear Hear's guest of the week is the political reporter Sean Adelasoye, a member of the Westminster lobby, where just, again, around about a fifth of all lobby journalists are women. She's a freelancer for the BBC, for Radio 4, and produces and presents packages for Women's Parliamentary Radio, Sean.
Yes, that's correct.
This is an issue that permeates everywhere. This isn't just politicians, this isn't just the lobby, this is in companies generally. But what does it feel like to be a woman in Parliament and to be a journalist?
Being a woman in Parliament, I wouldn't say is altogether that difficult, because there are plenty of women within Parliament. But when you get to the more senior roles, or when you start engaging with more senior politicians, you realise that you are a woman and everybody else is male.
One of the things that strikes me, I think you've made this comment to me when we've been socialising in Strangers Bar, for instance, which is the members' bar in the House of Commons, and certainly other ladies who are in there, is that it's very testosterone-filled. I'm not sure it's a fair reflection. It just wouldn't occur to men generally, is that women, some women anyway, possibly not yourself, slightly less kind of bullish in getting into a conversation and can be marginalised to an extent.
It can be like that for anybody who's new into Parliament. When you go into the bar, if you were going into a pub, there'd probably be a lot of males. And, you know, initially you would be a bit apprehensive as a female, mm-hmm. not only because of the sexual dynamics, but just because you're new and you don't want to be taken, you don't want to be seen as a good time girl, or you don't want to be seen as somebody who's not taking their
profession. There are plenty of members who flirt. I've witnessed it. They try and flirt outrageously with you, definitely, and other people as well. And they see a woman and it's almost kind of people act in a totally different way. And it's odd.
It's not odd. That's just male and female dynamics. I don't think Parliament should be any different.
You don't think it's more in your face than it would be if you went into a pub down the street?
No, not at all.
Have you suffered sexism, do you feel, within the parliamentary estate?
Well, you get the impression that sometimes you are seen as a bit of a dolly bird and just a woman. But if you have a head and you have, you know, have a strong opinions, you're there for a reason. Of course, you can put your views forward. If they may have those initial views about you, they're going to realise that you're not that sort of girl and you do have an opinion and you have a right to be here, just like they have a right to be there.
Equality, that's all anybody's asking for. And we'll get on to a little more of the anecdotal in a short while. But let's bring in now Preethi Sundaram, who is the Campaigns and Policy Manager for the Women's Equality and Rights Organisation, the Fawcett Society. Preethi, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Now, we've been chatting just amongst ourselves in studio about the notion of Parliament being quite a testosterone-filled place. But, you know, at the heart of it, you guys have done an awful lot of work when it comes to political parties promoting about women's influence.
Indeed. The Fawcett Society is very concerned, as you say, about the underrepresentation of women, not only in Parliament, but across public life. And we published in Coalition a report called Sex and Power that looked at the issue in detail. Our feeling is very much that political parties themselves are the gatekeepers for women's representation. What we are seeing is a lack of political will to really promote not only women within their party, but also positive action measures in the supply, the selection and the election of women candidates.
Something which your report references, of course, is the Speakers' Conference of 2010, which calls for parties to actively look at the notion of affirmative action, positive discrimination, call it what you will. Spoke to the Conservatives before coming on air, and they said, well, look, we actually have no A-list. There are lots of reports about David Cameron's A-list for women only. Liberal Democrats have just 12% of their MPs are women, and, you know, there's a feeling amongst some Liberal Democrats that to impose an all-women shortlist or any such thing could be illiberal. But the Labour Party do, with some success, they've got 32% of their MPs are women. But that's still not good enough, is it really?
It's definitely not good enough. And I think what you alluded to there was a Speakers' Conference, which was a cross-party agreement, really, on next steps forward. And the idea was there that if women's representation had not increased by a certain extent in 2010, there would be a renewed energy around the debate around quotas, a positive action, if you like to call it. We know that the Labour Party have had considerable success with all women shortlists. And we also know that when the Conservative Party in the last general election did use the A-list, that had considerable effect on the amount of women that were elected. So we know that positive action does work. We also know from international evidence, so if we look internationally, the vast majority of countries that have achieved over 30%, which is typically kind of known as the threshold, they have used positive action as well. So we are really going by the evidence, and we know that actually the rate of change is just simply not good enough, and just hoping, crossing our fingers and hoping that women's representation will increase.
Preethi, you get that change and you get the representation, but the problem is when you go to the centre and you go to the right, are those women that get in on an A-list being respected?
I mean, I think political parties and the media have a very important role to play in dismantling some of these myths around the idea that we actually have a well-functioning meritocracy as it stands. We know just by looking at the numbers that the system is not equal, because we have a cabinet where there are 4 out of 23 only 4 women there. So we know that looking at the outcomes, we know that women aren't actually rising to those ranks as they should. So I think there is a role there for parties and the media.
It's a smaller pool to pick from, of course, which I think, Preethi Sundaram from the Fawcett Society, that's the point you're trying to make.
Well, I think it's not so much only that, but it's also about saying that actually positive action is a way of widening the talent pool. So it's not saying that we're going to pick candidates who aren't suitable for the job. It's saying let's actually level the playing field, and to understand gender inequality, so to take a substantive equality approach to the matter, means that we need to look at the roots of the inequality, not just the causes. So that means that we may need to put in place special measures to level out the playing field.
Are you making up for lost time?
I mean, I think the rate of change, it speaks for itself. We're simply not seeing the rate of progress that we want to. And actually, these are ways of enabling more women to come through. We also know that discrimination against women is still rife. So that this isn't some meritocracy, as we've discussed before. On selection panels, they tend to be still heavily dominated by men, a very homogenous group of people that are picking the candidates. But also within Westminster, and you've alluded to this earlier, is this idea of kind of that the culture of politics is still rather sexist. So we need to try and tackle that.
All right,
as well.
Let's play devil's advocate for a second. The question has got to be asked. Obviously, there's been an awful lot of progress made. In the 90s, it was under 10% of representation. The figures speak for themselves. They are absolutely appalling. But one of our contributors to Have I Got Booze for You, Salwa, makes the point that, you know, if you're a mother, if you've got the sort of house, and this might sound like something from the 1950s, but this is a lady who's contacted us who says that to a degree, there's almost this pressure that she has to get out and work rather than doing what feels natural to her.
Feminism today is about choice for women, so we would never try to stipulate what women should or shouldn't do. But I think you draw a very interesting point out there, which is around the structural barriers that exist. So women still do the lion's share of caring work for both children and the elderly, and that does impact on their ability and their kind of their access to positions of power. So we know that even if you look back at the 2010 general election, all the leaders of the parties at that time were young men, young white men actually with young families as well. And there is the question there of, do women have equal access to those opportunities at that same level?
Because, well, that's true, but I mean, you look at the possibilities, for example, in the Labour Party. Harriet Harman was the only real sort of contender for the Labour Labour Party, but then there's a feeling within the Labour Party with performances at things like Prime Minister's Questions that she might not have been particularly ideal in terms of the climate that's there. I think you're definitely right that the pool and, you know, the circumstances that enable is what we need to look at. And Sharon, this is something you've done a documentary on for Women's Parliamentary Radio, is the creche in Westminster, and we'll chat more with Heidi Alexander about that later. There's a facility been put in place there, but frankly, it's out of the reach of many women.
It's not out of the reach of female MPs that are, you know, have just had children. They're able to use it. I did an interview with Jenny Willett, Liberal Democrat MP, and she was really happy that the creche was there because she was able to take her son with her. And when the house was sitting late, she was able to breastfeed him and put him back in the creche.
Yeah, £50 an hour, I was told by a female member. When it's out of hours, £50 an hour. Now, I don't care
MPs
if you're on
MPs get
a,
over £60,000.
They
a
get
year.
About, yeah, £65,000. Can you really? Because when you look at tax and the like, are women still not being penalised unfairly? Because if the business of the House does go that late, is it not reasonable that, you know, the Speaker and the House authorities look at maybe subsidising that to a degree? Or
not
actually, have
all.
I turned into a feminist
well,
now?
Well, I'm going to say not at all, because I've done extensive work on the cost of childcare.
Yeah.
And I don't think that a female MP should be made exception to women out there who are on a lot lower wages, who have to pay extortionate amounts of
childcare. All right,
childcare.
On that point, Preethi Sundaram.
Well, I mean, I think your point there about family-friendly practices is an important one, and the Speaker's Conference indeed looked at this issue of kind of the sitting hours of the House, of the nursery and creche facilities, and we very much welcome that there actually is a creche facility now. But there's also something around parties taking a stand on what the maternity and paternity policy should be for MPs of their party, and normalising the fact that actually women and men will want to take out time if they choose to have families. So I think it is about modernising, really bringing Parliament up to date, modernising our workplaces so that they are fit for purpose.
I think it's actually about respecting the role of women and not assuming that because you have children and you're going to stay at home with children that your role isn't as important. I've spoken to people who will remain nameless that have decided not to hire people or promote people because they know that they're pregnant and they don't want to pay them the extra.
Well, this is fairly mainstream. Actually, Godfrey Bloom, the UK Independence Party MEP, said, and I believe it was 2004, no self-respecting small businessman with a brain in the right place would ever employ a lady of childbearing age. Ladies, this is what you're up against.
It's also about valuing women's contribution to the workforce. So it's a very short-term view to think about not hiring a woman of a childbearing age, because actually, you know, that doesn't actually think about the long-term view of when she re-enters the labour market or the value of her caring work, as you've pointed out.
And indeed, so the influences, the point of view from a mother as well. And I think to a degree there's almost an unfortunate overhang, which is bluntly sexism, that when we speak on programmes like this about doing more, people will say, oh, you're just being politically correct or whatever. No, the figures speak for themselves. It is woeful.
To believe the idea that equality has been won is just simply not the case at all. We know that even before the recession, 30,000 women lost their jobs because of pregnancy discrimination. Women's access to power is still limited.
All right, Preethi Sundaram there, who's the campaigns and policy manager for the Fawcett Society, described themselves as the leading campaigning organisation for women's equalities and rights. Very interesting chat, actually, Sharon.
Yes, it was interesting to hear what she had to say. And what was even more interesting, that I don't think she really explored the fact that I asked her, is she making up for lost time? Because obviously for hundreds and hundreds of years, women weren't able to apply for the big jobs. So to use positive discrimination now, it's almost as if you're making up for lost time to say that
yeah,
it's never...
not her fault, is it?
It's not her fault.
The environment we live in. What do you say? Do you say, well, we haven't done enough now, let's not bother?
It's not her fault, but I think you should be honest about it and say this is why you're
doing
it. All
right, but what difference does that make?
The difference that it makes to people who think positive discrimination is a horrible thing, I think most reasonable people would actually think, well, if for hundreds and hundreds of years women weren't able to apply for a job, so the balance is so far out of reach that in order to level the playing field, we need positive discrimination to make things equal. And once things are equal, you can forget that.
Isn't discrimination, I think what you're getting at as well, it's an interesting point, isn't discrimination discrimination, however, so you cut the cake?
No, not at all.
No? So you're quite happy with affirmative action?
As long as it's only making up for lost time. I think once you have a level playing field, I think it should be about who's best for the job.
On that note, I think what we should probably do at this point, we've had plenty of comments in on the Have I Got Booze For You channel right here on Audio Boo. And I think it's time that we had a listen and a run through with Audio Boo's James O'Malley.
Have I Got Booze For You?
So
Sally Clay thinks that talking to her dad has helped her understand men.
There are differences between the way that men and women think. You know, I'm not going to lie, I am very much a woman and I think like a woman, and I've never really found sexism in any way to be a problem.
Lou Walker thinks that there can be a conflict between the rights and expectations of women.
I've worked for my organisation for the last 15 years. That's enabled me to buy my own home, to purchase whatever I've wanted to do, and I've done all of that without any male financial support at all. I don't think in this day and age that women can expect to have equal rights in the workplace but not in society, that they still should be taken care of.
JLL Tribute has been expressing some controversial views.
I would rather have a house built by a man, although it could be designed by a woman. If it was designed by a woman, it would have a much, much better kitchen.
That is so wrong.
And it would have sort of, you know, all the right appliances all in the right places. Oh!
Get in!
I'm sorry, folks. It had to be done.
Cold is it, dear?
Just a bit.
Hear, hear with Sean Dilley on Audio Boo. Sign up for your free account now.
James O'Malley there with Have I Got Booze For You. And if you'd like to have a mosey on over to audioboo.fm, find out how you can get yourself that free account or indeed contribute on the Have I Got Booze For You channel. We've got a website. It's hearhearshow.co.uk. And you can follow us on Twitter at Hear Hear Show. Twitter's the very much the big thing these days, Sharon, isn't it, politically?
It certainly is. I haven't got many Twitter followers. I'm more of a lurker than a tweeter. I like to see what's going on.
Well, you need to be careful with Twitter. We'll talk about that later when we get on to some of the picks of the week. Cameron's Cuties, I wanted to chat about this. Because there is an element, I'm sure in David Cameron's eyes, Ed Miliband's Nick Clegg, that they want to do something meaningful to actually...
Can I just interrupt you there? The Cameron's Cuties things and the Blair's
There's
babes, it's just really offensive.
I think what it is, it's indicative of the tabloid nature of Westminster, of course. Now, it's not a term that I am using or would use generally, but for the purpose of this, what I'm getting onto is Cameron's Cuties, which would be your Margot James and the like. She's got the hum. I don't blame her either for that, by the way. But it's nevertheless, it's the sort of sexist stuff that appears in the press.
I'd agree with that, Sean, begrudgingly.
Reluctantly, fantastic.
Well, we've got
a point. But look, sticking to the point of the PR offensive, because there is this element within David Cameron's Conservative Party. He has made real efforts, very much Ed Miliband's 32% of MP shows that he has as well, and Nick Clegg gets dear to his heart, despite the appalling representation of female Liberal Democrat MPs, it has to be said. But they go to such extents that when Desmond Swain was the Prime Minister's PPS, he went round at Prime Minister's questions just a couple of minutes before, shifting the male MPs from behind and around David Cameron so that he could be surrounded by, you know, younger looking female MPs.
How many members of the public actually sit and watch PMQs? Most of us are actually at work.
Well, Daily Politics on BBC Two, of course, on a Wednesday has over double the audience on a Wednesday it does any other
day.
Yes,
and I suppose those are some of the voters, but I don't think that people actually care who's sitting by the Prime Ministers. I think women care how you're going to help them get onto the property ladder. What policies are you putting forward that's going to help them make their lives easier? And we haven't really seen those policies.
What's your advice to David Cameron then? Because, I mean,
of
it. Well, no, that's fine, but Prime Minister's questions and the like. Do political parties and leaders find themselves too wrapped up in, for want of a better expression, window dressing rather than actually making real change that sees more women about the place so that you don't actually have to hide the representation?
I'd agree to some extent, but I think the main problem with PMQs is it does seem a bit of a sort of a lads show. If you look at some of the exchanges that Cameron has had with some female shadow ministers, he sort of goes back to this old schoolboy taking the mickey out of...
Yeah. Nadine Dorries, of course, who, when he said, "I know the Honourable Lady is frustrated."
Exactly. And that's the problem. Therein lies the problem.
And calm down,
dear,
of course.
And if you try to pretend that you're something that you're not, when you're actually free and you think that nobody's really watching, then we actually start to see the real you.
Is he sexist?
Well, he's certainly made comments that could be perceived as sexist. I'll put it that way.
All right. Well, on that bombshell, let's have a listen now to Heidi Alexander. She's Labour's MP for Lewisham East. I asked her to talk me through in the House of Commons just before recess her journey into politics.
my upbringing wasn't a particularly political one. My parents were the sort of people who would go and vote at a general election, but politics wasn't really part of my life. I became interested after I left university, joined the Labour Party in the late 90s, and then became very interested in my local community and stood to be a local councillor. And did that for 6 years, and then the Member of Parliament for Lewisham East, who was then Bridget Prentice, stepped down and said she wasn't going to stand again in 2010, so I decided to throw my hat into the ring for the selection process, and was duly selected and then elected in May 2010.
As a woman, did you find you had a harder path into politics than a man?
I'm not sure I did necessarily. I think what was quite unusual about me was when I became involved in local politics, I was in my late 20s, so people more often than not would say, you're very young.
You're not late 20s yet, are you?
I'm not now. but I think it is quite striking when you come into Parliament, just how male-dominated Westminster still is. And it's quite noticeable when you look at the Labour benches, the opposition benches. We've got a real mix of people, a far higher percentage of female MPs than the other parties. I think the Labour Party's got more women put together than all the other parties.
Yeah, let's
put
look
together.
At those stats. You've got 32% in the Labour Party versus the Tories, who have 16%. Surprisingly, I would argue the Liberal Democrats have only got 12%.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the healthy representation of women in the Labour Party, and it's still got further to go, mind you, but that that level of representation is as a result of all women shortlists, a controversial decision. Some people love them, some people hate them.
Do you love them?
I think that in order to get the step change in representation that is needed, if this Parliament is to be truly representative of the population that we're seeking to serve, then I think we probably do have to stick with them, because it does result in more women getting into Parliament. And I think if our politics is to change and be the sort of politics that people want to see, I think it's important that we've got a whole range of people elected here.
We spoke on the Hear Hear show just a couple of weeks ago, and it was with reference to black voting, but Anne Widdecombe, everybody smiles when you say that name. She's the former Conservative MP for Maidstone and the Weald, actually now represented by Parliament's by the Conservative Party's first female black MP. Now, she attacked the A-list because she said that under the way she was elected, she could look any of her male counterparts in the eye and say that she was there on equal terms. Why would she be wrong to attack what she perceived as tokenism?
All women shortlists that I have known about and been involved in, indeed I was selected through an all-women shortlist, the candidates have been top-notch and really quite exceptional. And so I don't think you get any easier ride into politics if you're on an all-women shortlist. I do think that sort of positive discrimination is actually necessary if you're going to change the culture of this place and actually get women into politics.
Well, let's have your views on that on the Have I Got Booze For You channel. You can see what we've done with the name there. Do you support the notion of A-lists in politics? I'm chatting with Heidi Alexander in Parliament. Heidi, I'm particularly interested in Parliament as an institution. Is it sexist?
Well, I have to say that since I've been elected, I haven't personally experienced any form of overt sexism. Is this place dominated by men?
Very much so.
Very much so.
Including the lobby, it has to be said.
I think that's fair to say. That I think that the journalists, the politicians, a lot of lobbyists, is male dominated. And, you know, I think that the setup here can be very difficult if you've got a young family. And I see colleagues of mine who have had babies during the time that they're members of Parliament, and I see them stood outside the division lobbies, sometimes literally with the baby in their arms, needing to go and vote. So I think that there are lots of things that really need to change. It's a very politics in the House of Commons is a very confrontational place as well, and I do believe that if we have more women in here, we may see a more constructive, a more consensual form of debate.
The Speaker, John Bercow, has been
relatively popular amongst female members and maybe more progressive male members for closing down one of the Commons' many bars. This was Bellamy's, very popular bar, incidentally, so an unpopular decision amongst others as well, and replacing it with a creche. But speaking to ladies around here, the costs and things are still relatively difficult. Do you think Parliament could do more to promote working conditions that are compatible with the lives of working mothers?
I think so, probably yes. I mean, I agree with the decision to get rid of the bar, popular as it was. And we still do have a number of bars, it has to be
Absolutely.
Said. But to replace that with a creche was really important. We needed something on site. Yes, the costs are still very high. I think the hours of the House of Commons, we have actually made some changes in the last year or so, which I think are vital. So on a Tuesday night, instead of being here until 10 o'clock and starting at 2:30 in the afternoon, we now start at 11:30 and finish at 7. And I think that I think that's far more family friendly, to be honest, albeit you have to remember that lots of MPs are actually a long way away from home and a long way away from their families.
Hear, hear with Sean Dilley on Audio Boo.
Heidi Alexander, Labour MP for Lewisham East there. She's never experienced overt sexism. And Sean, you're saying that you never have directly?
No, I haven't. I think people have made assumptions about me when they first see me and assume that they might not know why I'm actually in Parliament. But after speaking to me, they know why I'm here and they can see that I'm pretty strong-willed and a little bit argumentative.
You're certainly
at times.
A little bit strong-willed. Curveball to you now. You could be accused, couldn't you, of maybe playing off your gender to a degree, and certainly even your Twitter handle. This serves a dual purpose. We give you a nice plug
not
here.
Not at all.
Is at Who Is That Girl UK.
Yes, that is my Twitter handle, but that's a long story.
Yeah, but it brings gender into your professional identity.
Well, that was because I had a friend who gave me a day's shadowing. And
sort of going in and seeing how things work, isn't it? And work
Yeah, in a newsroom. Basically, work experience whilst I was doing my MA in broadcast. I'd say at City University. I think my old lecturer would kill me if I didn't say that. And he kept getting asked, who is that girl? His boss asked him, his boss's boss asked him. When we went to another event, as soon as I went to the loo, he kept getting asked, who is that girl? Who is
right,
that girl?
If you were a fella and you were doing the work experience shadowing, do you think they would have said, who is that bloke?
No, I don't imagine that they would. But if it's a male-dominated industry, which it is, and if they look at me and they see me, then, you know, that's what they're going
you're
to
you're quite,
to
don't
ask.
Take this the wrong way, but you're quite a lots of people say, quite strikingly good-looking girl. Do you think that probably helps or hinders?
Well, that could help or hinder in any situation. I think when you don't have something, and if you do have something, you always want to be something else. Someone with straight hair would always want curly hair. Someone who's not so attractive would want to be attractive. Someone who's attractive would rather not be that attractive because they find that it hinders them in some ways.
I wouldn't want to be any more attractive than I am now, I tell you, I struggle. listen, if you're interested in getting involved, you can do so on the Have I Got Boost For You channel. Visit audioboo.fm to find out how you can get yourself a free account. Picks of the week that are not equality or gender related, Sean?
I really like the story with Sally Berko and the tweet that she did, which has cost her a lot of money.
Right, we'll recap, of course. Sally Berko, at the time of the Newsnight investigation, had said, why is Lord McAlpine trending innocent face? And obviously there were a few legal actions flying about with the BBC and ITV at the time with Philip Schofield, where his name was accidentally released. But it was argued successfully in court that Sally Berko's tweet kind of put the name out there.
Yes, I think it, you know, well, I'm not going to say whether it was the right decision or not, but the decision has been made.
Well, it's cost $100,000 in legal fees. I think
well,
we can
has.
Say it was the wrong decision, to be fair.
And it's, you know, it's certainly a warning for people out there who are on Twitter that they need to be careful about what they tweet, especially if they've got, a large following.
Always touch on this subject, all right. I think most mainstream journalists would say it's worth people sort of doing a little bit of the old citizen journalism, but you shouldn't think you can guess the law. We have training on that.
Exactly, but journalism is about finding out information, but it's also about watching your own back. You know, there are a lot of journalists that are freelance, but they've also done courses. Not everyone has done a course in journalism, but if you do a course in journalism, you do media law.
Oh, indeed, or training as well as part of a vocational experience, I suppose. Now, the other story you spotted?
I was actually really irritated by a story that I saw in The Telegraph with Jo Swinson talking about parents not telling their children that they're attractive. I actually think that it isn't government's business to tell parents what they should or shouldn't tell their children in terms of their appearance. She argued that if you tell your child that they're good looking, that's all they're going to focus on. This is part of the whole body conscious campaign and, you know, yeah. slim extremely slim women being on the front cover of magazines.
That's right.
Normal size women, whatever normal is, being on the cover of a magazine, because they'll end up with some sort of complex if you tell your child that they're good looking and they don't live up to the expectation when they go through puberty mm-hmm. and through life. But you know, you can argue, if you tell your child, well done, because you're really clever and you've done really well in this maths exam, you know, when they fall short, all of a sudden, does that mean the same thing, that they're going to have huge insecurities?
So what she's saying effectively is you should focus on their intellect, isn't it?
That's what she's saying.
And not everybody
but it
can
works
be intellectual.
Both ways. Not everybody can be intellectual, but what we need to do is build on our children's confidence. And if they are good looking, or they look nice in a suit or in a jumper that they're wearing, you should be able to tell your child that they look nice, because that makes them feel good. And it also builds up their confidence. So if you get people in life that tell you, oh, actually, you're not that attractive, or you're not that clever, or you're not that smart, or your height isn't a good thing, you're confident enough to say, well, no, actually it is, because it's been instilled within you at a very young age.
At Hear Hear Show on Twitter, or directly to Sean on at Who Is That Girl UK if you've got a comment on that one. Thank you very much to Sean Adelasoye, freelance political journalist, for joining us on this week's Hear Hear Show. The one message is clear: the law has been changed. Political parties can discriminate in favour of women, but the question is, should they? Next week we'll be looking at politics and spin. How important is evidence and fact, and how much of it is really about how you present things?
Hear, hear, with Sean Dilley on Audioboo.